Welcome to Good Health, Better World, where we bring experts together to discuss issues that shape the health and well-being of our communities. Good Health, Better World is sponsored by UPMC Health Plan. I'm your host, Dr. Ellen Beckjord, and in this season, we'll focus on behavioral health and the mind-body connection at every stage of life. Let's dive in. In this episode of Good Health, Better World, we're going to talk about behavioral health and resilience in the workplace. We'll talk with Jim Kinville and Nancy McKee from Life Solutions, UPMC's employee assistance program. Jim is the senior director of Life Solutions with over 20 years of experience in managed care and specialty health management. Nancy is the clinical director and a registered nurse with extensive background in behavioral health. Jim, Nancy, welcome to Good Health, Better World. Let's start by talking about decision makers at companies who know the value of healthcare that supports their employees' physical health. But why is it important for employers to also focus on total health and thinking about behavioral health being a large part of total health? Jim, can you comment on whether you think employers are giving ample attention to behavioral health and why it's part of the total health package?
Thanks, Ellen. By far today, we're experiencing more than ever, especially what's happened over the last 2 years, an increase in the awareness and the importance of individuals' mental well-being. And certainly we see the outcome of that in all of the workforces that we provide services for, particularly as it relates to the individual's overall well-being, connected with physical health, connected to areas of their work-life balance, and also in areas of their production and quality of work that they're delivering in the workforce. Inevitably, all of the things that we've been challenged by over the last 2 years have made an impact on an individual's personal and work life. And more so than ever, what we're finding is that employers are definitely more sensitive and definitely more interested in that overall mental well-being of their employee workforce.
And seeing it really tied to things like retention and productivity in the workplace?
Absolutely. I think what we're finding now, we hear a lot about the Great Resignation. We hear a lot about other areas that there's more opportunities for individuals within the workplace. And clearly, I think as employers look at those incentives as how they can attract talent, clearly this is a huge aspect for employers to look at how they can promote and encourage the mental well-being of a new workforce. And individuals are looking for that. They're looking for a culture that's going to embrace that overall mental well-being and that overall focus on how they can really get through a work day and also balance it with their personal life.
Nancy, can I ask you to comment on things employers can do to really create a space where employees feel supported and where they can feel validated or heard as challenges associated with behavioral and mental health might come up for them?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that employers have to do is learn to listen. And just hear. You don't always have to have an answer. You don't have to know what to do that minute. You have to know that if you give it some time and thought, there may be a better solution for how you move forward. When I hear the word resilience, one of the things that I hear from employees often is that more is being asked of me, whether it's at home, whether it's at work, but it comes into the workplace, right? So I think one of the things that I try to teach people is that resilience is an action word, and you have to take action. You have to take some steps to make it better for yourself, whatever that may be. But you need to have a personal inventory, like what's going on with me right now that I don't feel so resilient.
When I think about all of the ways we've had to adapt because of the pandemic and ways that that's caused stress, that we're being called upon to be more resilient. But I'm curious, Nancy, and then you, Jim, on your perspective about whether the demand to be resilient has increased and if that maybe even predates the pandemic, if that's been growing for some time, even outside the context of COVID.
I think that's a really good question. And along the way, you know, Jim and I talked about this, is that there's just more going on in the world. And so that it can affect each of us differently. Some of it may not affect us at all, and some of it may impact us in ways that people don't know. And I always think the important thing is we don't know people's stories. We don't know what they're carrying or what they're bringing into the workplace. And we used to say, leave your personal life at the doorstep. Well, your personal life may be at your doorstep because you're working from a hybrid model or a home remote location. So we're asking people to look at it differently than they did before. I think we've always asked people to be resilient and to know themselves, but this is a little different.
Yeah, when I think of resiliency, I think of it as the opposite of burnout. And I think when you think about burnout, it certainly has an impact on our complete life. Burnout typically gets associated with the workplace, but when you think of it, it really those behaviors can't only isolate themselves to the workplace. And when you think about resiliency, it's really, I think, areas of optimism. It's areas of having a zest for life. It's having energy. It's being able to be organized. It's being able to be creative. Those are all the things we want, right? Those are all the things that we want, not only for ourselves personally, but we also want those in the workplace. That can only be positive for an environment in the workplace. If all of those things are in sync, that means the work environment is going to be that much more positive.
I think that's a great description of what employers can really expect when their workforce is healthy and body and mind. That not just productivity, but creativity and good collegiality in the workplace, all the things that really are associated with just better outcomes as people are trying to navigate their career and the work that they do. Which brings me to the really vital role of employee assistance programs, which are not a part of every workforce experience, but several of them. And so, Jim, can you tell us, what is an employee assistance program, and how does it function to help support employees and to support leaders as they seek to really optimize and support their workforce?
Thanks, Ellen. And in the spirit of us focusing on resiliency, I would say the first thing is an employee assistance program, it's the responsibility of that program to enhance and to activate the best culture of organizational resiliency that it can be. And that not only involves the workplace itself, but it also involves all of those employees. It involves all of those employees' families, their loved ones, and their household members. So our services really expand the spectrum of any individual within a workplace. So when we think about the employees, the family members, the loved ones, the household members, we have ultimate support of services that we can deliver to them for any particular mental well-being need that they may have. In addition, they may have other needs that they want to improve themselves in various aspects of life, whether it's learning a new skill, learning a new leadership quality, learning a new way to get organized. But certainly, you know, a primary element is how can we support them from an overall mental well-being perspective, which can involve counseling, it can involve, you know, strategies for coping mechanisms, coping skills, et cetera. On the other end of the spectrum, what we can also deliver is how do we support the organization in improving their culture? And it really starts with what can we do for leadership? How can we enhance their skills? How can we make them better leaders? How can we encourage them to bring awareness to mental well-being? How can we make them more effective listeners? In the spectrum of EAP, we have a variety of other areas to support individuals. And certainly when we talk about the variety and the sadness of the what we describe as disruptive events, critical incidents, unfortunately, those are real. We also, I think, a couple other things to just highlight here is we also make sure that we gear our services to unique populations. So, for instance, to give you the spectrum of a couple things, we have individuals that are starting a new family. So we can certainly support new moms, new families, new parents with all kinds of resources for that great life event. On the other end of the spectrum, we have obviously the older adults where there's an awful lot of need in the areas of caregiving. We have services that can support them with legal support. We have services that can help them with their financial wellness, which we know that's also one of the top three areas of challenge and stress that individuals are going through. And then we also have just a lot of other courses and classes that we teach along that spectrum for personal enrichment and for personal growth, et cetera. So I think it really, you know, we joke about this, that EAP is really the kitchen sink of anything and everything that really involves mental well-being, counseling, behavioral health, work-life balance, et cetera.
So I'm curious if you can comment on whether you've seen an increase in utilization of EAP services over the last couple of years. And if you want to share, either of you, any specific examples of services or programming for staff and for leadership that really stand out as ones that you're either getting lots of requests for or ones that you feel like have been especially impactful over the past couple of years or even currently?
Yeah, I think the one thing that we're seeing, and this is to add to what Jim has said, that I think leaders need to know that we're there to support them in ways that sometimes it's just consulting with us. How do I handle this? What do I say to somebody? And not walking away from something that's a problem, but really early intervention is really key. And being able to say, there's been a change. You don't have to say much to the employee. You can hand them a little EAP card that said, here, why don't you call them? Now, that's just an introduction to how they can come to our services. But I think we have seen more, you know, for a while, more people were working from home. They're coming back. So we're seeing increased issues dealing with that re-engagement in the workplace. And how does it work? And do I really need to be here? Or can I stay home more? And I think that's a question that all employees are asking each other. And it's a question that you're just not going to know the answer to all the time. So we have to work together on this. And I think that if you're resistant to change, that's going to be the hardest time for you. You know, change is hard for everybody. So I would say, just give it a few minutes. Take an inventory. What makes this so hard for me? How do I see this as a problem? And employers the same way. How could this be hard for our employees? And what can we do to better engage them in this process? And I think that's the thing that Jim talked about is the articles and the information that UPMC puts out there from Work Partners. It's really good information just to kind of sit back and think about.
And as you talk about the challenges of change, it calls to mind for me again the importance of resilience. That change is difficult, but resilience is sort of a key construct to help us be able to successfully navigate and manage the stressors that come with change. But Nancy, you mentioned Work Partners, and so I just want to make sure for listeners, we've talked about employee assistance programs, and at UPMC, our employee assistance program is part of our company Work Partners. Jim, would you like to say just a few words about Work Partners and how it fits into the bigger UPMC ecosystem?
Yeah, thanks, Ellen. Yeah, we have a very, very unique and positive approach and directions that UPMC has created by really creating a division of services and support to employers that really outline very critical areas of their benefits. So when we think about all of the other administrative components of a benefit offering, UPMC 25 plus years ago created a division to focus specifically on areas like work comp and safety, right? Huge area of importance and requirement for employers. We also added on over the years services that we can provide support for leave and absence and those elements of a benefit that individuals use for a variety of reasons. We also have added EAP, of course, what we're focusing a bit on today. We also include all of our health and wellness offerings. So from, you know, opportunities for incentive programs, opportunities for health coaching, opportunities for a variety of other trainings and learnings on how you can improve your wellness. We also have offered a full enhanced and very a sophisticated data analytics system that really can overlay all of those areas to really help employers. And it's helped UPMC greatly to understand what's going on with your employee workforce in all of those areas, because quite frankly, all of those things are connected. When we think about an integrated approach, so if they happen to get injured at work, inevitably their pay is going to be adjusted during that time. Inevitably, they're going to go through the emotions of what the impact of that injury was. There's probably going to be family dynamics that are going to be sensitive. We clearly can come in and provide a lot of great EAP support to them. So our ability to wrap around all of these services together is just quite phenomenal. On the wellness side, when you think about somebody who gets diagnosed early on with being a pre-diabetic, inevitably a lot of emotion to that, right? A lot of concern, fear, anxiety. We can certainly come in and we can help the individual cope with some of those emotions. So a couple examples of very uniquely of how we tie it all together to really build, I think, a better workforce at the end of the day. I just want to go back to a couple of the comments that Nancy made about the workforce, just to level set for us, too, when we think about, and this will be some of the general data that we see out there of late. So if you go back to your workplace and you look around the office and, you know, and if there's 20 of you in a room, you know, inevitably there's going to be upwards of probably 12 or 13 folks that are going through something, you know, and I think to Nancy's point, there's a story that we all have. We also have found that over 200,000 kids lost a parent during COVID, you know, and so when you start to look at some of these, you know, data points and you put them all together, you start to recognize, obviously, we are in the midst and have been in the midst of a pretty significant mental well-being need and challenge that we have. And so for us, I think, as Nancy pointed out, when we go into an employer group and work with them, this is the culture that we want to help support. And I think when you think about opportunities for employers to look at what they can do, we're talking a lot about this today, breaking down the stigma. Are they talking about it? One of the great programs that we operate and run is we provide training. It's called Mental Health First Aid Training. We recommend it to all of our groups and all of our leaders. It's an opportunity to help recognize the signs and symptoms of mental well-being issues within the workforce. I think the other things that we see and we consult with employers on, what are they doing creatively and uniquely with their employees during the day? Are they offering stress breaks? Are they offering mental well-being breaks? Are they offering, you know, chair yoga? Are they offering, you know, some of these other wonderful meditative mindfulness-related activities? The other thing we've talked a lot about, and I want to emphasize this point, is how are they making their employees feel valued? Are you getting to know your workforce? Do you know something personally about your workforce? Do you know people have kids or people got married or people are, you know, having other exciting things going on in their life? That's what brings people together and makes them feel valuable.
You know, when Nancy was talking about keeping your personal life at home and not bringing it into the workplace, and you pointed out that the increase in the degree to which we're often working from home, you know, really sort of challenges that idea. And then, of course, we've talked about how as we go to either a distributed or a hybrid workforce model, so much of how we used to do things has changed. And that's not to say that it's worse or that it was better or that it can't still be possible to drive really strong culture in a workforce that hits on all of the really important things you've both been talking about. But it has really blurred the lines when people are working from home part or all of the time, more frequently now, between home and work. And I'd love to hear from both of you, and maybe Nancy, we can start with you, about ways you've seen employers become more creative about supporting employee wellness in distributed or hybrid workforces.
I think what I'm seeing is that the supervisor leaders in HR are bringing us into the to work environment. So they may have a group of employees that they want us to talk to or work with. And that's very helpful because I think on a personal basis, we still have some stigma that we want to get over. Coming to EAP does not mean a diagnosis. Coming to EAP is very personal, and it's a, and oftentimes employees will say to us, oh, that's all it is. You're listening to me, and I feel validated. And that's while they, at times, that's what they want, just to feel validated. So I think supervisors who've used our resources are really good about saying to somebody, I think this could be helpful to you. And they're not embarrassed to say, I've called EAP. I've used it myself, and it's been helpful. So we see that quite and hear that quite often, and it's really comforting. We're doing some groups for one of the leaders that, you know, I'm getting good feedback from is that they like, employees like talking to each other because they may have lost that. And the employer has kind of worked it out so they have a little time in on their work time to be able to do that and benefit from that. So I think That's the creativity we're seeing from supervisors and human resources.
You know, when you think about it, 2 years ago, the country, the world had to pivot within a couple-day period of time in how we were going to run all of our businesses and how we're going to manage all of our people from home. The workforce at that time, for us, we do an awful lot of work supporting our frontline workers, and their life changed in different ways. They obviously aren't working remotely, but clearly for all of the reasons that we know, their life changed completely as well. And so that was certainly an area of opportunity for us to get to those leaders, to get to those individuals that were having to continue to be in the workplace under very tumultuous times, dealing with a lot of trauma, a lot of grief, a lot of loss, but then also at home, having to balance at home when the world was going through the crisis. And so us being able to get into those areas also changed significantly to the positive. And the positive being that this whole virtual opportunity for us to communicate has blossomed into a very significant and important element of how we deliver our services, not only for the convenience sake of it, but also accessing more people. And so one of the practical things, obviously, as Nancy is mentioning, is the fact that this channel has now opened up us getting to more people than we did when it was pre-pandemic and everything was in person. We've done more trainings, more consultations, more therapy than we've ever done over the last couple of years because of that channel alone. So again, I think that's another element, a practical element, I think, of how we can reach folks. The other thing, I think it's been a good outcome of having to really learn how to manage differently. Managing somebody in the office is completely different than managing somebody remotely. So being able to consult, being able to offer our expertise and ways to affect that positively has also been hugely, hugely beneficial to leaders, to managers, supervisors, etc.
Listening to you recount March of 2020, thinking about how much has happened since then, and how we're at a very different phase of the pandemic right now, but all of the pivoting that had to happen, all of the stress and the tremendous burden on frontline healthcare providers, it's still hard because in many ways we're very much still in it to try to take a step back and appreciate just how much has changed and how much has happened. But as I was listening to you talk, Jim, I feel like we've been pretty resilient. I feel like at least I guess I can speak from the UPMC perspective and the part of the world that I live in on the insurance services division side, I feel like we've been pretty resilient. What do the two of you think?
I think we certainly have worked on that. I think that we have come up with even our creative ways. I think it's important that we keep all that in the forefront. It's not just one day that we're resilient. It's that we keep being resilient, that we keep looking for ways and keep hearing employees and keep hearing leaders tell us what would work best within their environment. I think that we have a really a nice platform to bounce off of, and I think that's been really helpful because I don't know that everybody knows that other people need that support and help. And I like that we have RxWell as well, the digital tool. And we use that quite frequently with them coming to talk to us.
And I'm glad that you mentioned RxWell, which just briefly, as you said, is a mobile application that has lots of education and techniques that can help people with anxiety, depression, stress, nutrition, physical activity, smoking cessation, sleep, even family coaching. So digital tools like that, I think, play an important role in helping people really maintain the work that they're doing to support their own resilience or well-being. Jim, did you have thoughts about our overall resilience?
You know, I believe that all of us are resilient in our own ways, and it's a matter of how do we continue to adjust to that level of resiliency for the type of situation at hand. And certainly over the last couple of years, everybody's resiliency has been tested and certainly has been challenged. You know, by some estimates, there's going to be an increase of 35 million more individuals are going to be raising their hand to get help with some level of mental well-being need. So when you think about that, that's 10% of our population. you know, at large that folks are going to be, and many of them have. And I look at that as a good outcome of resiliency because people are raising their hand, they're destigmatizing mental health, they're looking at ways to improve those aspects of their life. And the other cool thing that I think is sort of an element of resiliency is thinking about all of the wonderful ways people can get support to enhance their mental well-being. You know, we've touched upon our internal digital behavioral cognitive app that we have created with our great experts and scientists like yourself, Ellen. But when you think about all the other options that people have now, more than ever, you know, over the last couple of years. And so there really is, I think, so many different ways people can get supported with their mental health these days. It's not just counseling. It's counseling. It's telephonic counseling. It's virtual. It's video. If they're interested in an app, there's literally thousands of different apps they can use. But the point to all that is people are now recognizing it's okay to talk about your mental health.
I agree. And I love the idea of resilience. I think one of the things I really like about resilience is that kind of, you know, if you've heard the saying sort of where people talk about how being courageous doesn't assume the absence of fear, right? It sort of assumes the presence of fear. There's no reason to be courageous if you aren't afraid. And I think that resilience operates in a similar way. Like, resilience doesn't assume the absence of challenge. In fact, it assumes the presence of challenge. It assumes that a person is challenged, is being stressed by something, and yet perseveres. And I'm thinking back to a conversation we had leading up to this episode when, Nancy, you talked about the importance of people feeling empowered to help themselves. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that and its role in resilience overall.
I think resilience starts with each of us. We have to know who we are and we have to know what's getting in our way. And sometimes we have to declutter our brain. I think that sometimes we have so many things going on that you have to kind of prioritize, like, what can I do right now that can change that will help me get to the next step? So we're talking about small steps. We're talking about you being the person in control of that. There are things in our world that we're not in control of. And I will say to people, draw a circle around yourself. And what's outside that circle, oftentimes we can't control. So to be resilient is what's in our circle that I can make a difference with, that I can change, that I can start today and say, even if it's something little, I have control over that. That's saying I'm in charge of me.
I love that. The last question that I'll ask both of you to please speak to is one that we're visiting pretty regularly with guests on the podcast this season, which is, if you think about the landscape of opportunity in improving behavioral health, or I'm happy to talk about this in the context of how employee assistance programs function, if there was one thing you could do, if you were going to put all of your chips on one bet or all of your eggs in one basket, where would you put them?
I think it comes down to valuing yourself and valuing the people around you. You know, you need to be able to look around you and what do they bring to the table? What do they have to offer and what do you bring to the table? If you're in a situation where you're feeling angry or not happy or not supported, like, I want you to step back for a minute. What's driving that? What's changed? What's happened that you don't feel that you're valuing you or you don't feel others value you? Because I think we have to make the changes internally, and I think employers have a responsibility to make those changes as well. You know, what is different now than it was a year ago? What's different now than it was a few months ago?
As employers look at themselves from a mission, vision, and value, do they have mental well-being as part of one of those constructs? To the degree, do they have a mental well-being champion within their organization? I think mental well-being support, and I think it starts from the top. So that would be the one thing I would say for employer groups is, how are they at the C-suite level really recognizing mental well-being? And what simple action steps are they putting in place to bring that culture into their workforce?
I love both of those answers. And I know that, of course, I'm biased. You two are probably biased. It feels like such a safe bet for an employer to make, doesn't it? I mean, and partly because of what you've both talked about, this is an impactable problem. There are more, as you said, Jim, resources and services and evidence-based interventions and treatments available for people to improve and maintain a really high level of mental and behavioral health than ever before. You know, there are plenty of problems that are really entrenched and hard to imagine how we might impact in the world today. But improving your own mental health and supporting the mental health of your workforce are solvable problems with great returns. I want to thank both of you for being guests on Good Health, Better World. It was lovely to speak with you and really appreciate all the great work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you all, and you as well.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Good Health, Better World, presented by UPMC Health Plan. Be sure to check the episode show notes for information and resources related to behavioral health. We hope you tune in next time for more support and insight.